The Garnet Wager is a show where two players compete in a fantasy-style competition while watching episodes of The Genius. Their drafted fantasy genius contestants earn or lose points through their actions, leading to an ultimate victor at the end of the season. But points don't tell the whole story. You never know when some fantasy garnets will turn the tables. Listeners are invited to play Fantasy Genius as well, through rules and criteria provided via links in the show notes. May you chase those ugly victories and beautiful defeats, even from the safety of your home. This is the Garnet Wager. Begin.
Hello, friends and folks. We're all going to die someday. Welcome to the Garnet Wager. I'm Alan Ibrahim, and I'm joined by Six Detmar.
Hello. I'm going to die someday.
Probably. Maybe? Possibly. Could be.
I have it on good faith. I have it on doctoral authority.
Doctority?
This is going nowhere. Don't try.
This is a Genius podcast where Six and I watch the Korean game show The Genius, and we played Fantasy Genius, and this week we watched Season 3, Episode 3. Coming in hot. Season 3, baby. We're on the third part of the third one. I want to jump in here right away. I jumped. That was me jumping. And I want to say, this episode was pretty good. I thought this main match was really fun.
Yeah, I mostly had a pretty good time with it. It was a lot. There was a lot to digest in this episode, Season 3, Episode 3 of The Genius.
Just really repeated for the kids so they know which one we're watching. Don't let them forget.
Well, you know, you gotta make it clear. I recently updated all the titles of every episode to include what episode it is rather than just the main match name, because it turned out that wasn't super helpful for some people, which is fair.
Including me, because I never remember what the main matches are called. Yeah. For example, what was this main match called?
Middle Race is the name of the game.
Oh, because it's a race to the middle.
Indeed. In this main match, our contestants were attempting to run a race, but neither be first nor last, stay firmly in the middle.
Right. Everybody gets an ability. They're sort of defined by their character. It's like, they're like Dota heroes, I feel like. Yeah, that's my closest comparison. And, you know, different Dota heroes work really well together, and some counter each other, some don't, some complement each other, some don't. And you want to make plays that will put other people either in the front or in the back, and then keep yourself smack dab in the center. I thought it was really a lot of work, and it shows on the producer's part that every single piece felt distinct and useful.
Yeah, when they were explaining the rules, I was like, oh, this seems like a proper board game. This seems like a game I would play, right?
Yeah, you'd buy this.
And then they kept playing, and I was like, oh no, this doesn't seem like a game I would play because it's kind of a disaster.
It's a disaster in what way? Like, I thought the part of the problem was just the players. Like, when I don't understand the rules that well or I can't remember everything, it's like, okay, whatever. I don't have the time of, like, production and, like, practice and rehearsal that they obviously do, so it's fine that I don't get everything. But when they don't get everything, I always feel kind of iffy. I'm like, oh, shit, like, you guys don't even know how to do. Do you know how to play? Like, do you know what this play was going to do?
The rules just had too many interactions is basically what I mean, like, you had those, like, you had push and union, and if they were on the same space, it's like, oh, okay, they can infinitely push someone back and forth to generate, like, whatever their power is. Or, like, there's, you know, just, like, the way not only did abilities overlap, but there was, like, oh, this ability always has this timing, and everybody goes in these turns. And it's just, there were so many factors that could interact in so many different ways that it just led to, like, many instances where one particular turn was just a complete mess.
Right, right. It led to some really cool plays of like, oh, you comboed this in a really fun way, and like some of them pointed out that you can sort of do an infinite back and forth with a couple of combinations, a la the game from last season, where there was an attempt to make an infinite play and it didn't work out. But it, I think the meat of it, what ended up being really fun to me was the way that like a group of people would pick who to take down and then like collaboratively work to knock them out. Because I think this is a big reason. This is basically what happens to Yongsook, is a lot of people are like, well, no hard feelings, but he has a Black Garnet. He hasn't been great in, as an ally so far. What if we just got rid of him this week? We can totally do that. Let's do that. Let's just push him straight to the front. And they do it. It's awesome.
It's interesting because I feel like it's part of the problem. It's the problem that Gura actually addressed in season one, right? Which is the problem of if you are in a situation where it's like, oh, okay, like we can all work together and decide a winner and a loser, right? Like,
yeah,
that's the nature of this. Then like, the problem becomes, how do you pick someone, and how do you pick it and not make it feel like mean, or, you know, like a vendetta almost. And I think that's a lot of what like Hyunmin was concerned about, right? It's like, how do I play this game without being an asshole? Because I kind of, there's no way for me to be nice in this game.
Yeah, and they talk about, like, I need to directly take somebody down, but I don't want it to seem like I dislike you, because I don't want you to lose. I just need to push you a little bit towards losing, and, like, this is good for me, but I'm sorry, but don't hate me, please. You're going to lose. Like, that is sort of the key of the big conflict between Hyunmin and the other person who gets into the DM, whose name is Yeon-sung, right? Yes.
Yes.
His breakdown was, like, really scary to me, because it was, like, it felt very sort of, you know, we've been talking forever on The Genius about how these players, despite, like, ridiculous shit happening, always keep a level of, like, really healthy composure. And what was weird was, like, he kept composure, but he was still fucking mad.
Mm-hmm.
He's just like, you planned to take me down from minute one. And Yunmin's like, no. Like, that's not how this works. And he's like, no, you did that. You need to acknowledge it. You tried to take me down. It worked. And then he just kind of like walks away and they like have their adults about it. But, you know, I'm not used to seeing that on The Genius. I don't know. That was like cool though.
Yeah. He really impressed me this episode, honestly. I don't know, like, it's not necessarily that, like, his play in the main match impressed me, but, like, I feel like once he got to the point where he was pissed, I felt like he dealt with that really well, right? He didn't, like, he put psychological pressure on people by being like, hey, I know what's happening right now, and you need to admit what's happening as well. And then later, he was able to basically translate that into, like, okay, so now you have to help me as best you can in the DM, because you screwed me over, so let's make this good. But not, like, making it... I feel like he did it without making any enemies, you know?
Yeah, exactly. It's a really smart way, because, like, yeah, suppressing your emotions in a moment like that is really tough, I get that. And he handles it really well. And it kind of, like, made him stand out to me where... You know, you pointed out when we were texting about this episode beforehand, like, man, I kind of wish I had him on my team. He's doing a lot this episode. Yeon-sung is, like, standing out finally and making plays and everything. There was a lot of, like, groups of two or three people working, like, we are going to do this. Here is our perfect plan. Oh, shit, other people are in this game.
Yeah. Yeah,
which I think is real fun.
And so, like, what... So, first off, I should mention that there has been a slight tweak to the rules. I guess more of a clarification, a thing that hadn't come up... Well, I get it came up a little. Anyway, what I'm trying to say is, we once again had the situation in the opening of Dongmin deciding to be an asshole.
Uh-huh. It's standard. This is the natural order of things.
Yeah, no, this is just how it goes now. This is just our lives. And so... We had a quick discussion about, like, okay, how do we want to address this? Like, I don't, you know, we've had a big talk about how Dongmin has some has done some stuff that we have a problem with, right?
Yeah.
But it doesn't feel like it's super productive to just bring that up every single time either, you know?
Right. We're trying to watch this critically, and we've acknowledged the problem with that, and it hasn't changed or evolved in a meaningful way. So it's, like you said, it's not worth, like, reiterating every time, because there's other things mm-hmm. to talk about, and it's still bad.
So the compromise we've come up with is that when someone gives someone else shit about their outfit, the person getting shit will automatically get an amazing outfit fantasy points. And this is across the board. If someone makes fun of Dongmin's vest next time, he's gonna get points for that.
Right.
That's fine. We're standing in solidarity with you. Don't make fun of people's clothes. So, in this episode, that meant that the women got, all three women got fantasy points because Dongmin started picking on them for, like, just like, oh, what's with your clothes this week? And I really liked Sujin being like, "How come you only ever pick on the women?"
Women, yeah.
That was a good moment.
Right. The producers deliberately had all the women come in at once, and everyone's mm-hmm. like, "Oh, the girls are here." And he's like, "What's with these weird clothes?" And it's like, dude, you don't have to do a comedy bit every time a girl comes on the screen. Like, you just don't have to do that. I know that's your whole bit. Your whole shtick is like, "Ah, I got my zinger in right at the last second. Like, I'm the wacky one." Like, just they're just playing games with you. Like, just let them be people. Yeah. And I think it's good that we are giving points to the critiqued and not taking points from the insult. Because, like, my player would be at, like, a negative a million if every time he, like, lobbed a dagger like that, he lost points. I would just, this would not even be a fair game.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think that's a good compromise. And it doesn't require us to add a rule. It kind of, like, slides itself into the good outfits rule.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's a good compromise over there.
So, I have a question for you, Sax. Sox.
Sure.
What were a few of your favorite plays of this episode?
I mean, like, so of course I feel like Hyunmin had some great stuff, some great, like, planning and, like, just doing what it seems like Hyunmin's going to be doing all season, where he's, like, keeping, like, being the most tuned into the rules and coming up with these, like, elaborate ways to use them. That's just, it's really fun to watch, you know? It's really fun to watch him come up with these various schemes that, it does make me want to see him, like, at this point, setting aside fantasy points, I kind of, more than anyone else, want him to win because the idea of him in an All-Stars would be really interesting. I'd love to see him playing against, a Jinho. That would be really interesting.
Yes, very interesting.
Besides that, I'm not going to say this stands out in a good way. It seems like maybe Huizhong's back to his old self, huh?
Uh-huh.
Maybe he's just back to full-on cocky Huizhong.
Yeah, it's like this is the, again, natural state of things is that he has to be a little bit controlling. And that was like the first couple of notes I had in here were Hyunmin is like really having a lot of fun with the game and playing it really well in like a friendly way and not a dangerous way. Because early on he's like, people mentioned that he has like a lot, he's a high-value player. And he's trying to get people to come to his side. And he says, "Look at me and say how much you love me." And everyone's like, "You're cute. You're handsome. I love you." It's like adorable. Everyone's just being silly. And then we cut to Huizhong, who's just like very controlling, very like, "I got this, guys. Like, I can knock out all the players if I want to." And it's like, no. This is exactly what got you knocked out in week one of last season. Why are you doing this again? What happened? Twice.
You need to remember your chill. You haven't been a big winner yet. It's not like you've had a match where you dominated. You've skated by, usually praying that no one like decided to hold it against you. You haven't earned this.
He hasn't won games. He hasn't gone to a DM and won. He's just like coasting and running good alliances and like, all right, you're gonna survive a while, I guess, with that. But you're not like the Songmin of this season. You're not like, I'm the kingmaker, I'm the playmaker, this kind of thing at all. You know, if anything, mm-hmm. I would say this episode, obviously Hyunmin, and then also person whose name I just forgot again. Yeonsung, sorry. He's like the one, him and I think there are like one or two other players who I'm just like, I know you, but we're still early enough that I like haven't remembered your name. And I could point, obviously I remember your face, but anyways.
Part of the problem is that because he, like, honestly, in ways he reminds me the most of what you and I would be like in one of these games, because he's just like, he's nice and socially awkward and doesn't ever want to speak up.
Yunsung, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, like, there are lots of situations, like, you're not remembering his name because it never gets said. Like, he comes up, he's in things, but a lot of the time it's him standing on the edge of the conversation, and, like, you see him opening his mouth to say something and then shutting it because someone else is talking and he doesn't want to interrupt.
Yeah, very us, exactly.
So.
So he's just, yeah, he's doing fine, but in this episode he kind of, like, stands out a little bit more, obviously in his reactions to things and him trying to, like, get all these different, these middle race plays going. I just in general, I like just to get into the crunchy mechanics of it. While I do think that it was a little bit too complicated for the players, like, and I'm not exaggerating, like there is a scene where the dealer is like, oh, here's where you, nope, wait, that's not what the rules are. It's like our favorite dealer. She's very good. And she forgot the rules. It's like, yeah. Guys, you made the game hard.
Yeah, I felt like that moment was such an indictment of the producers, of the people who made the rules, of like, listen, this lady knows her shit. If she's getting confused by the rules, you went too far.
Yeah. Like, if I was honest, I always try to think about, like, how would I play this game if I was in it? I would just, like, remember what my thing does, maybe remember what a couple other people's things do, and then just, like, guess numbers. Like, I don't know, I'll take two. Hopefully I don't die.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just ends up being more about like, all right, who am I working? Is the person in my alliance like gonna tell me how to play? And if they do, do I trust them? And it's doesn't have to be that complicated, but yeah, knowing what all the things do and how they interact is like some real heavy duty thinking that this game doesn't lend itself to, especially like for these players who are just on a show. Like you could, you know, if to compare this to video games, because that's like obviously a common cultural touchstone for us. There are, like, if you told me right now, like, Alan, we're going to get into, like, a turn-based strategy game. We're going to get super deep into it. But you'd give me, like, a week. You know, that would be, like, our Garnet Wager homework is, like, we're going to get really good at a 4X game. And we could learn it, and we could practice it, and we could read about it and try things that are failing. They don't get any of that. That they're just like, all right, here's the rules. Figure it out. Get your teams together and go. And that's, you know, I think that's a big reason why, like, it feels like it's designed for them to have more time to think about it, but they don't.
Mm-hmm. I was really surprised this game didn't have a rehearsal.
Exactly. Yes. The thing I was about to say was like, they kept, once the actual playing happened, they only took one break and it wasn't even a long break. And I was like, wait, they don't get like a, okay, hold on. Let's see if we understand what's going on moment. No, no, no. It's like, you guys know the rules. The game has started. Mm-hmm. We're doing all the rounds now.
Yeah. It was definitely a lot to take in, and I felt like I understood the flow of the game, but there were a lot of, individual moments I also felt like I understood. It was sort of this middle layer of, like,
yeah,
knowing what was going to happen on any given turn before it happened, I didn't really understand.
Right. Little like, cute or interesting moments in the middle that I noted. Once everybody makes the grand play to knock out Yeong-suk, he kind of this is how I read this, is he was trying to counter that play because when everyone else was making their moves, he would request that they make certain moves. Like, and mm-hmm. what it turns into this weird psychological thing of like, if I don't do what you say, then it's going to read like a slight to you. And I don't want you to think I'm betraying you. So instead, I just have to do everything you say. And now mm-hmm. You're making our whole plan fall apart. And it was like so interesting. I'm like, whoa. The psychology going on in this scene is really fascinating. If it is how I'm reading it,
I don't think he was conscious of the of the plan to screw him over. I think he was just like playing the game normally, and everyone else was like, "I don't want to be the one to push the knife in. I'm gonna There was a lot of like, "Okay, we've got like six people on our side. Someone will take him down. I'm gonna grant his request so that he'll look favorably upon me."
Yeah,
you know, afterwards.
And then no one does, and then there's a point where I think. Yunmin is like, this isn't working. This is falling apart. This plan is going so bad.
Yeah, we need to actually do the thing now. Like,
right.
We can't all say fail. And then, you know, Yunmin has that moment where he sits and he's like, the thing about this game is you can't like you can't hide what you're doing. You have to, like, to their face be like, okay, I'm going to screw you over now. There's no other way to play this.
I love that shit. I love it when the genius does that. I really love it. And I don't know if it's, like, my love of drama and, like, the thrill of the game, but when the players have to look each other in the eye and say, like, I'm making a play. This play is probably going to screw you over. I don't care about that. And, like, do it and commit to it. That's so cool. Because they always keep their cool. They always keep composure in this show. Nobody ever gets, like, actively mad. Like, this is also why it really annoyed me that the flash forward for this episode was it you son, I think? Who was the woman who was crying in the flash forward the whole time?
Yeonju.
Yeonju, sorry. Too many names. Yeonju just, like, crying. I was like, this is dumb. No one actually cried. Like, if you cry on the genius, it's because somebody left. Like, they're clearly, like, pulling from a moment that's just stressful and, like, playing it up for drama. And we finally get there, and it, like, it is stressful because basically they're like, hey, no matter what you do, you're taking one of us out. I want you to know that whatever play you're about to do is going to break one of our hearts. And she's like, no, I don't want to pick somebody. I'm, like, paralyzed by indecision. And I feel that, and I would maybe cry in that situation, but I really think that the way that the flash forward works makes it seem like something horrible is going to happen, like someone's going to die. It's so overdramatic.
I mean, this isn't The Bachelor. I mean, I think you're overselling it a bit. Yeah. It definitely, I mean, they oversell it too. I really hope one of these seasons, like, I feel like every season I at least hear from someone like, oh, next season they get rid of the flash forwards. It turns out to have been false every single time so far. They also say that we're not going to have repeat games. Huh. We'll talk about that one, won't we? It's frustrating because it does feel like emotionally manipulative in the way that this show is usually not, and also super doesn't need to be.
Yeah, exactly. That moment's already huge.
Yeah, it's you don't need to make that like you know, the classic thing on The Bachelor is like, you know, like at this and tonight someone's going to the hospital, and then like wow, and you see like a shot of an ambulance, and then like in the actual point of the episode they walk past a hospital and see an ambulance, and you're right. Like, oh, I see. You don't need to resort to that kind of shit. You really don't.
Don't
the
lie
show
to the viewer, right?
Works.
Respect my intelligence.
Also, we're getting to a point where, like, the people I really dislike on this show are leaving.
Yeah. Sick.
I'm starting to like this cast now.
Exactly. That was my moment when Young-suk got into the DM, and I was like, yeah, he can't do it twice. He's totally going home. This is going to be sick. We're going to lose a player I don't like for once. And it's early in the season. We still have plenty of good players. Like, this is great. I was very happy with the way that things played out, actually.
Yeah, I'm really starting to come around, and it's like, just don't resort to cheap tricks. You're already high class. You don't need to get cheap on me.
Yeah, it's good stuff. And then, so just my last couple, my notes about the main match were, my two favorite Hyunmin moments were one when, towards the end, he's trying to make some plays and he's trying to be 100% sure that he understands the rules. He's going from one room in the house to go to the dealers, like sprinting over, being like, hey, can I do this? And they're like, yes. And he's like, thanks. Runs back, talks to the team, goes back to the dealers. Hey, is it good if I do this other thing? And they're like, yeah. And he goes back. And it's like, he's like a 5-year-old who's being like told instructions by both of his parents on other rooms. And he's sprinting.
There's a moment as part of that where he's like, yeah, he's whispering to the dealer, like, hey, if, you know, like, if jump goes down to one card, do they get that free reset, or is it only at two cards? And Young-suk is, like, 5 feet away.
Yeah, he's just looking. Yeah, I remember that. He better be whispering. He really better be, like, very whispering.
Yeah, it looked like Young-suk was giving him the eye, like, something weird's happening, but didn't seem to get the connection that it was connected to him. So,
Young-suk also always kind of looks like that because he's a lawyer, so he's always, like, kind of reading people.
He's always kind of giving everyone the stink eye.
100%. Very much so. And then, again, right after that, the other good Hyunmin moment was, I think this was, like, he was just doing well, or I forget why he said this, but he said, is there anyone who wants to just give me garnets? And that made me laugh a lot. It's like, does anyone want to just, like, give me garnets, please? The man is making plays, is what I'm saying. And I really... He's easily my favorite on my team, and he's probably my favorite in the season so far. Mm-hmm. So it's good to see him doing good things.
I'm starting to come around on Yu-Hyun as well. He had a moment that I thought was really good characterization for him. And yes, I continue to know that these are real humans, but this is the way I know them. Where he was like Hyun Min was trying to go for different deals, right? And he had a standing offer from Kui Jong and from Yu-Hyun. And he's like, and Hyun Min's like, I don't know, which one should I take? And Yu-Hun's like, well, okay, listen. Like, here is Hui Zhang's offer, here's mine. Hui Zhang's offer is, like, straight up probably better. But, like, listen, I'll be straight with you. Like, I'll be with you win or lose, however this goes.
Aww.
And it's just this moment of like, sincerity and, like, a willingness to be like, yeah, no, I think Hui Zhang has the better offer here, but, like, you know.
Don't forget about your brother in the corner.
Yeah. and Hyun Min seemed swayed by that. He was like, oh, okay. But I think Hyun Min was mostly swayed by, I'm giving you a garnet whether or not this works, which, you right. know, it's nice to have an insurance policy.
I'll take it.
Hmm.
It's funny stuff. But, I mean, I think that takes us, unless you have any other big notes on the main match, because, yeah, we bring Yun Sung and we bring Yong Suk to the death match.
Yeah, I mean, let me think, there are some other stuff. I liked seeing the crazy interactions of the different powers, and I liked seeing how having specific abilities brought out people's character, I think. Where, like, I feel like Ah Young was, like Ah Young, between the other main matches and this, is looking for someone to be a strong partner with. She's looking to form a strong duo,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
That's her dynamic there, right?
Yeah.
And, like, Hyun Min is looking for a way to break the rules and create this ridiculous scheme that just works. Yu-Hyun is looking to make deals, but sort of, like, be honest and straightforward about it. Hui Zhang is looking to be kind of, like, exerting power and opportunist. Dongmin is looking to tell you that this is how you should really be playing the game, you guys.
He's so, like, arrogant.
Yeah, it just, I really felt like I got a lot out of everybody in this one.
Mm-hmm.
And it was again, really good in helping me like the cast more.
Yeah. Even Sujin, like you said, not nothing huge in this episode, but it's nice to see her, like, cracking jokes. She's very funny. I like mm-hmm. the humor that she brings to the show.
Yeah, she's sharp.
Yeah, exactly.
I you know, I am really glad to be wrong about my suggestion that she wasn't going to try very hard.
Right.
It seems like she's here to play, and I'm here for it. She seems great.
I forget if it was this week or last week. It's probably last week where they were like, "Oh, I think she's the oldest player here," and she's like, "Yeah, age comes beauty, age comes brains, motherfuckers." Basically,
yeah.
Don't give a shit. I'm like, yeah, you tell them. Yeah, fucking Dongmin and his arrogant ass is like, everyone else thinks you can't win by yourself. I got this. I already know how to win by myself. Does not win. Like, he makes it. He survives. He gets in the middle. But it's like, you didn't do much, man. In this episode, he goes very much Kim Gura, where it's just like, I'm not going to talk to anyone. I'm not playing anything with anybody. I'm just going to do my thing and quietly sit in the corner. Which, I mean, I will take that over him, like, yelling at people and being a poop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seemed like he just lost the momentum as far as, like, charismatic appeals, and without that, he was like, okay, I'm just gonna go for a role that allows me to just stay in the middle. Like,
yeah.
with his role, it was kind of hard for him to lose.
Right.
Oh, all right, man. Well, I guess we're ready to talk about our homework.
Ooh, homework? Homework? Homework. I'm a Pokemon. My Pokemon name is Homework.
What type are you?
Fairy type, obviously. Next question.
I see. You're pure fairy, huh?
Pure fairy. I mean, it's me and Sylveon just hanging out in the corner, gaying it up.
That sounds about right. So, this week for homework, we watched some of The Dragon Prince on Netflix. It is an animated series. And, yeah, how you've seen all of it. I saw four episodes. Why don't you intro it a little more?
Sure. So the Dragon Prince 2018 series, Netflix original, created by a lot of the talent behind Avatar The Last Airbender, as well as The Legend of Korra, specifically Aaron Ehaz and Justin Richmond, who Ehaz in particular, like, apparently was a big reason that The Last Airbender was able to conclude as well as it did, was he was very good at like course correcting the plot, and he was a big head on the writing team on that show. And so it comes from that same pedigree of like young adults in a high fantasy world. It concerns three kids, Ezrin, Callum, and the Rayla. And it starts with the setup. And this is why I actually asked that you watch at least more than like two episodes, because I like those first two episodes in hindsight, but I did not like them as I was watching them, because I was just like, ugh, world building, like just world building, no story, no character, like who cares? Like, yo, this king is like hot as hell, but like, what do I do with that? What is my, what's going to continue to keep me watching for nine episodes? Because they set up this whole thing about like, there are elves and dragons and humans, and the humans got freaked out and discovered dark magic instead of the other five types of magic, and they used the dark magic to push the, and they did evil things with it. They got kicked out of the east side of the country, pushed into the west, so we have like a west and east split. Obviously a lot of parallels to the real world. And then they fought back using some more nasty dark magic, and they killed the biggest dragon, Thunder. And then they also theoretically destroyed Thunder's baby in its egg, the dragon prince, the titular dragon prince. And so Ezrin and Callum and Rayla find out that the egg is actually not destroyed. It's being held by the evil wizard, Viren, who's a human wizard that's sort of like the vizier of Callum and Ezrin's father. And so they go on this adventure to like take the egg and bring it back to its original country and bring it to its mother's home. And that will theoretically end the war. You know, it's sort of like kids thinking that they can fix the world's problems by going on an adventure story. Mm-hmm. I want to start by asking, like, just on a broad spectrum, like, did you like the world of this show? Were you interested in seeing like the different factions and the sort of political dealings and all that stuff?
So here's the problem. I liked the world building better than what it was building to.
Hmm, okay. So you mean like you enjoyed the world but not the story being told in it?
I enjoyed the story being told in it at first, and the story takes some turn. I don't, are we okay to spoil the first three episodes? Does that seem fair?
Well, I mean, the thing I just described where they find the egg happens in episode three. So, like, yeah, that's the start of the show. You know?
Yeah. I should, you know, I'm going to go a little deeper on it. If you want to avoid spoilers, if you did not know, in the show notes, there are timestamps for every segment of this episode, and there always have been. So just go down to those and skip to the DM if you don't want to hear your spoilers for the first three or four episodes. I'm really irritated with what they did with Viren.
With the vizier?
Yeah, because he comes off, well, not he comes off, he is pretty directly stated to be like this character that is like misguided.
Yeah.
And kind of selfish, but he wants to do the right thing. Like, there is a moment in that I think that third episode where he's like, okay, clearly the thing I have to do here is to go to the king and offer to die for him. Right? Like, I think this is the right thing to do. The king is my friend. I'm going to go to the king.
I love that moment. Yes, I know.
It's a great moment, and they fucking destroy it. They ruin it. Like, the scene is good. But then after that, he just becomes the evil wizard. He becomes so 2D, and it's terrible.
Yeah. Whenever Viren and Rayla are the two, like, characters to focus on as this show continues, because it's going to get more seasons. My biggest complaint, briefly, with the season is that it kind of ends and you're like, oh, like the first two episodes you end or two or three and you're like, okay, now the show starts, and then the first nine end and you're like, wait, now the show starts, and it's really like, oh, but I want more, and that's a good thing, but at the same time I'm like, I feel like I barely got a full arc out of this, like I need a little bit more. And I think that Viren as a character, like you said, starts as sort of like that first scene where he's in the like castle and on the balcony talking to his best friend, talking to King Harrow, and they have this like pretty interesting dynamic, and they're like kind of rivals, but they're also kind of like close family friends, and they want to work together. But what he realizes is that in order to succeed and get what he wants, he has to be callous. He has to lose a little bit of empathy. That is the only way to master dark magic, is to sacrifice your own empathy. Because that is how he's able to do the big thing that he does at the beginning of the show. And also send his kids out to find the prince and his brother. Did you get to that part? Did you get to the part where he has sent his kids out?
No, but it seemed like it was pretty inevitably where it was going.
Right, they're setting up Claudia and Soren as, like, these are going to be, like, they have to do something in this show. They're good characters. I love Claudia. I think it's fascinating that they have a kid in the show who is, like, a kid like everybody else, but is also clearly, like, could be one of the main villains of this whole series. Like, Claudia is, like, really badass and like, can do some awful shit. But,
The way they treat her, where it's just, like, I mean, like, they have some great scenes of her just being like, you know, like, oh, just like a clueless book nerd. And then she does some really awful shit. And it doesn't feel incongruous. It feels like the same character is really, they thread a very compelling little needle there.
Yeah. And I think it's weird because then you have Soren, her brother, who is like just cartoon idiot. Like, I like him. I am kind of usually a fan of that trope of like the idiot villain. Who's just like, I don't know, this seems cool. Like, this sword's big. I want to use this big sword and stab people with it. But I think the best moment for me for Viren, a lot of people talk about the I'm not horrible, I'm a pragmatist moment that's later in the series. But he has this part where he's talking to both of his kids. He has two separate conversations with them. And he talks to Claudia and he says, I'm going to send you out with Soren and you're going to... Well, he goes to Soren first. I think the progression is important. He goes to Soren and he says, you and Claudia are going to go and you're going to get the dragon thing and it's going to be awesome and you're going to be the new prince once I die. And I'm giving you the power. And the son is like, oh, like, that's really great, but I'm really worried about, like, what happens if I have to do murder? And he's like, oh, you'll know what to do. Like, you're smart. You got this. And kind of, like, lets his son figure that out. And it kind of goes where it goes. And then he talks to Claudia and he treats her much more like an adult. And she jokingly sets up the situation of like, oh, like if it's the egg or Soren and one of them has to die, which one do I choose? And he doesn't answer. He pauses. And then she's like, Dad, I was just kidding. Like, obviously, like, we both know what I would choose. And then she turns away to leave. And then he's like, you would choose the egg. I would have you kill your brother if it meant that you could keep the egg. I'm like, oh shit. Like, him and her are not fucking around. This is not like, because again, coming from watching Avatar, I'm like, oh, the like parents are going to like be empathetic to their kids and that'll be their weakness. It's like, no, he doesn't give a shit that these are his kids. Mm-hmm. And it makes him a cool villain. It makes but like you said, it just makes him become more and more one dimensional as the series goes on, because you don't really see his interiority. You don't understand why he's just a shitlord after a while. He freaking has the... I know, this was a cool thing I noticed watching it back. In the, like, setup, they show the dark wizard that discovered dark magic with his staff. Viren has that same exact staff. He has that staff. It's like they're seeding it immediately that this guy has the potential to do all the horrible shit.
Mm-hmm. And then I guess the other problem was that they really did a great job with the king.
Yeah.
And then they killed him. And then it's like, okay, I guess we're at an interesting character. Because I really felt like it was like they layered on elements gradually, and like a lot of them were tropey, and then they sort of pulled it back. So it's like, okay, he's the king and he's like this like stand up like proud guy. And oh, but oh, it's okay. He treats his you know, advisor and like best friend with a lot of respect. And like they're equals. And it's like, oh, and he's good to his kids, but also, oh, he's got, you know, this heavy burden of duty and he's willing to face the consequences. And then there is that scene with Viren where he's like, wait, I'm going to die. Before I go, I have to tell you, you're a fucking asshole.
Yeah, before I probably get murdered, just a heads up, like, you suck.
Get murdered mostly, and it's mostly your fault, like... And you really expect it, like, just the way the scene is set up, it's like, it's going to be this nice, touching moment between these two friends. And it's like, I feel like a much more honest moment of, like, showing how flawed this guy is, and also how people are when they think they're going to die. He's like, listen, I don't want to die with regrets. You fucking piss me the fuck off.
It's so good. Harrow's my favorite adult on the show, I think.
And then he's dead. And it's like, listen, Rayla... is all right. She seems kind of interesting. I like her accent.
I love her accent. I like that she's acknowledging. Sorry, I like that she's a woman who acknowledges that she's good at everything, and that's not like arrogance. It's like, yeah, I'm very competent. I could kill everyone here if I wanted to. I won't because I want to make friends, but like, I could do it.
Mm-hmm. And then the princes, I just don't care about at all.
Yeah, they're just they are the Avatar characters. Like straight up, the voice actor who plays Callum is Sokka on Avatar: The Last Airbender. They just got that guy, and he's doing the exact same type of character. The like sort of awkward, bumbling older brother, very protective of his sibling. It's 100% a Sokka like substitute. And I generally like that stuff, but I feel like he doesn't really have much of an arc.
Hmm.
Because his biggest arc is, you even see it in the first three episodes, is him going like, oh shit, I can be a mage. It's like, great, you can be a mage, you can do magic and protect your brother. Like, that's cool, I guess. He just doesn't have a lot to do. And then Ezrin is like very well voice acted and adorable. And he's got his cute little like barfy rainbow frog friend. But he doesn't get any development until like literally the end of the show. And they're like, oh shit, Ezrin's an important character anyways. So it is weird that the main characters get the least development, I think.
Yeah, I guess that's the problem is if I were to continue going forward, it's like, I care about so few of the characters you seem interested in, right?
Yeah.
I did get to meet Amaya.
Yes, before. I was going to ask if you met Amaya. Oh my god!
So she's obviously pretty fantastic. I should back up a bit. One of the things that we absolutely should have touched on, and like for the first two episodes, I wondered if it was going to be the thing I had to talk about, is the animation style, right?
Yeah.
Because it's very much, Guilty Gear Xrd came out.
Right. You're either seen this style before, you either hate it or love it, and you already know the answer.
And it certainly inspired a lot of people because, it is that like, 3D cel shaded with like specific use of like lighting and camera angles and intentional frame rate limiting to make it look like 2D a lot of the time.
Yeah, exactly.
And I feel like it's really hit and miss, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Like there are specific areas where like their frame rate limiting on it to try and make it give it that halting look. Like there are times where it looks great. Like there's a sequence of them like climbing a spiral staircase, and it's like it has the like the smooth motion and consistency of CG, but it still has like the crisp kind of motion of you know like of a traditional animation style of cell animation, and I think it looks really good there. But there are also times where it feels like they just didn't nail like the frame rate limiting, and it's like real animation would have more frames than this. You're doing like this animation with like 6 frames where it would have had like 10, and it just looks weird.
Right. I think it looks really, really jarring in conversation, and then it looks really good in action, which is kind of what they have to do because, like, you know, conversation is just people's mouths moving and them emoting, but, like, you lose a lot of humanity when you're trying to watch that part and like, get invested and, you know, push past the fact that it's animation when the frame rate is so low that you're just like, this, like, kind of looks robotic in a creepy way. I think in action though it does work a little bit better because it feels very like comic booky where it's like flash, jump, crash, slash, each thing has an animation to it. And they made like a big effort to show all of that and have it be very, very clear what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it works and sometimes it super doesn't. I agree.
Mm-hmm. So, I feel like that's worth bringing up because Amaya is a character who, I'm guessing she's mute. She speaks entirely through sign language. Mm-hmm. Or she might be deaf, or she might be both, I don't know. But she speaks entirely through sign language, and first off, it's really cool just to have a badass, like, warrior character who speaks through sign language. That's cool. Uh-huh. But also just the way the animation style combines with the sign language makes it really, like, conversations with her look better than conversations with anyone
with
else.
People,
that
right?
Animation style really makes that shine, and it really just looks awesome anytime she's on screen.
Yeah, somebody put in a ton of work making sure that sign language look was completely accurate. That's ASL sign language, American Sign Language. It's all shown very well. It's Translated by her interpreter when it needs to be, but not when it doesn't need to be, which is fantastic. Like, I think it's in that episode with her where she goes to the grave. I think it's like at the end. She goes to her sister's grave and like signs to the grave, and they don't translate it. And you're like, oof, this works better because I don't know what she's saying. She's fantastic. This is the thing. This is why I was like, maybe you'll enjoy watching more of the show. Is like every episode they introduce somebody like her. That's kind of what the meat of the show is. Is like they go somewhere and they meet someone interesting and they learn something, and that's it. It's very Avatar in that way, where it's like this week we met the tribes of people who hate each other, and not all of them are like main cast people, but they flesh out like the world and the way that magic works. I love the way magic works in the show. It's all cast spells. It's not like, you know, people, it's not like the Force or being a Super Saiyan. It's just like you put some shit in a thing and then stir it up and say the right words and then lightning comes out. There's a big like recurring thing about like Callum learns how to start a lightning spell but doesn't know how to finish it. So he can just like put lightning in his hands, but he doesn't know how what to say to throw it. And it's really interesting. I don't know, I just feel like they set a really good groundwork for a cool show. It's clear they want to do this for many seasons, and I hope it did well enough that they can, but like I feel like even if you watch all 9 episodes of this, you'll just be like, okay, yeah, they continue doing that.
Mm-hmm.
They got better at it, and I like these characters, but like, okay, let's go.
I don't want to be this person, but I feel like the show would be better if it weren't a kid's show, and not because I want to see people get killed or because, like, you know, there needs to be, like, blood and gore and stuff everywhere or swearing, because I feel like the show suffers for having overly bland audience surrogates.
Yeah, you know, Callum and Ezrin especially. And Rayla feels like the like young teen girl growing up kind of story.
Mm-hmm. And she's like, she's okay. Like, listen, if it was her and two more interesting people, it'd be fine.
Yeah.
But yeah, those two princes are just like, oh, it's a kid's show and you need two characters who are like just basically plucked out of modern era kids. Like, yeah. They're just, and it's just so boring to watch them do anything.
Yeah, they're not great. Like, the thing is they're fine. They're completely serviceable. The only thing I would bump up against you saying that you wish it wasn't a kid show is, like, you know, since it ends up focusing on those kids and this sort of, like, inherently, and the show acknowledges this, but, like, inherently naive view that, like, if we do the thing, then we'll fix the war. Like, the whole show's premise is childish. So, like, if they made things really serious, I think that would clash really weirdly with the fact that, like, if we're going to take the egg home to its mommy, like, if you're going to make this an adult show, then it's a different setup. It's a completely different, like, premise and world and everything. But yeah. Maybe there is, like, potential in that, in this universe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's hard to theory craft what this show would be if the leads were a little different, so.
Theory craft, you goober. What? Do you think you're going to continue watching any of it?
I think I'll probably watch a couple more episodes. Like, especially with the introduction of, because what happened was I finished episode 3 and I was like, okay, they are walking away from the stuff they built that I thought was cool. And now it's just boring characters on a journey. And then it's like, okay, well, Amaya seems cool. And with the idea that they're going to keep introducing like new characters they meet on the way who are interesting,
yeah,
they've basically deferred my judgment. Like, they haven't made me say yes. They have deferred me saying no. So I'll give it a few more episodes to convince me.
That's fair. I just want to see more of it. Like, I watched this thinking like, oh, I'm gonna like settle in and I'm gonna like have a bunch of episodes and I'm gonna have a ton to talk about with my friends. And then I finished it and I was like, oh yeah, okay, well, I could just watch Avatar again. That show went for 3 seasons and it's all out there and I could just watch that. It made me want to rewatch Avatar for the 3rd time. That show's so good. I know you're never gonna watch it 6, but it's very good. Young adult fiction, it's sometimes awesome.
Yeah, I just end up, I usually end up wishing they'd go further with their ideas. That's a consistent trend.
Mm-hmm. It's my little edgelord friend, Six.
Yep, that's me.
I think if we're going to get edgy, though, it's time for us to talk about our death match. Get it?
That's fair. Yeah.
Okay.
That's true, you know.
That's valid.
So, this week we played Black and White 2.
The second time.
Maybe I should make that joke about the creature game again.
Yeah, do it one more time.
Yeah, no, it's like Lionhead, you know what I'm saying?
You can pet the big panda.
Yeah. Sacrifice the Christmases and get some lightning.
Black and White 2. Not only is this a repeat game from last season, this is a repeat game from 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
What a... We just said last week, wow, you guys have infinite potential in games and DMs if you just pull from real games and tweak the rules. And they're like, no, fuck that, fuck that. We made a perfect game in Black and White 2. It's like, Black and White 2, Black and White's fine, it's fine.
To be fair, this was the better of the two games of Black and White.
Yes.
Two.
This one I was like, yeah, I get it. I understand what's happening. I think this is kind of fun. I totally fell asleep at my desk during this DM, though, so I don't have a lot of notes on the middle of it. I was tired, to be fair.
Yeah.
It's not that it was bad. I just was sleepy.
I mean, basically, it's just... Yong-suk did fine. Yong-seong played him like a fiddle. Ta-da!
Congratulations. Like,
it was a hard decision, but I ended up giving Yong-seong... win deathmatch dominantly. I know some folks will disagree with that, but there was really no point where he wasn't winning or things weren't going according to plan. And so though the ending score was close, it was 5-4, he was in control basically the whole time. And so I'm definitely going to give him the win for that. It, like, I don't know. It just seemed like, well, first off, I want another game. I just don't feel like there's that much potential in drawing. Like, it's that I feel like this game doesn't draw that much out of people, you know?
Exactly. It's just like there's a little bit of guesswork of, like, what did the opponent pick if I only know that he got his number decreased by a factor of 10 and I know what he's pulling from approximately. Like, that's kind of it. That's, like, that's the math you're working with. That's the mind game. It's not much.
And I feel like the reason Yong-seong won here was he was just more thorough.
Mm-hmm.
He just took the time and was more careful and more precise with his work. And he also, you know, went out in some mind games. But for the most part, it's kind of just that Yong-suk played it a little fast and loose, and it burned him pretty bad. So.
So, yeah. Good job. Congratulations, you made it.
Yeah. I don't know. I enjoyed the DM. Also... I don't know. I feel like it showed a lot in his closing monologue, in Yong-suk's closing monologue there. He just felt really detached.
Yong-suk, you know? Did?
Yeah. Like, he did not get emotional monologue. No. He was just kind of like, well, you know, I came and I played and it was fun and, well, I guess these kids, they're just gonna have... It's like,
Did you care? No, that's what I kept thinking. It was like, did you care that you were on the show at all?
Right. He just didn't seem to have... I don't know. He's what I worried Soo-jin would be. He didn't seem to care. Like, it makes you look back at things he did, like cutting, you know, Hui-jong and Dong-min and cutting them some slack in episode 1.
Yeah.
And being like, did that just happen because he didn't give a shit?
Yeah, was he just like 50-50 on it? It kind of like solidified that. I was like, oh yeah, this guy never was like that invested. It seems like he was playing, but he wasn't playing to win. He was just playing to play.
Mm-hmm.
You don't lose like that unless you're either you make a bad mistake or you're just not, your heart's not in it. Because Yong-seong wins, but like he starts it being like, I'm under a lot of stress. My blood sugar is low. I'm freaking out. I'm like really scared. And that fire under his ass, like, propels him to do really well. And you never feel like during this series that Yong-suk had that kind of motivation to do well. He's like a successful lawyer.
The DM, the last episode, he felt pretty invested. But in a way, I guess maybe that's also just him being in his element and delighting in him getting to do what he does on the genius.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
It's not like, oh, I'm so invested, I have to win this. It's like, oh, this is the thing that I do. Hell yeah, I get to do it on TV.
Exactly, yeah. What do they call him? Lawyer Kang? Lawyer Kang?
Mm-hmm.
Throughout this? It feels like it's because he is literally a lawyer. That's not a nickname,
and
that's like a title.
His last name's Kang.
Yeah, it's a title, but it's just like, they refer to him with this high respect, but he's just like a dude. He's just a lawyer. Like, just let the guy come and go.
Sometimes respect is also distance.
True. That's true. He's Mr. Mr. Kang.
Yeah.
I don't want to. I feel like there has to be more to say, though, because, like, Black and White is still in, it's still in theory kind of a fun game, you know?
Yeah.
You pick your numbers, and I thought it was funny how sometimes they write zero and sometimes they write zero in Korean.
Yeah, that was mostly Young Seong was doing some fun writing there, and I was into it, because actually I felt like that was a smart strategy, because, like, when, like, there were times when, like, when Young Suk would enter his thing and he'd just do, like, draw a huge ass circle, and I'm
if
you're
zero
across the way, you could tell what he just did, right?
I was totally thinking about that, yeah. Or you draw, like a one, and mm-hmm. it's like you drew a straight
just like,
line.
Whoop. Well, it's like, okay, you did a straight line downward. Gosh, I wonder what you entered. Whereas, like, it's like, instead of drawing a zero, you write zero in Korean. It's like, I don't know what the fuck he just put in, but damn.
It's like
you
five
know? Like,
circles and, like, three lines going diagonally. This is awesome. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was just a really good, like, masking of what he was inputting. I thought it was really smart. And then sometimes he did do numerals. It was,
yeah, he mixed
it
up.
It was really clever. Yeah.
Shout out to Good Plays.
Yeah,
Who would have thunk it? When the genius players do good plays, it makes us happy.
Right?
Hmm.
It's nice. It's nice, damn it. We had fun.
We had a good time. I'll turn this car around and then turn it the other way because we have to go to the hotel. We have reservations.
We do. But before we get to our reservations, we have to talk about some fantasy points.
Mmm, delicious. Mop them up.
So this week for our fantasy points, it was a pretty close one, actually. Neither of us had the real high scores, so you ended with 22 fantasy points and 3 garnets. I'm going to toss you a further 3.
Ooh.
For the homework.
Oh, yummy. I'll take those. I'll put those in the bank.
And then I got 31 fantasy points and 3 garnets. This brings our overall totals to, you have 86 fantasy points and 16 garnets. I have 69 fantasy points and 16 garnets. We have the same number of garnets.
Oh, shit.
Because it's mostly just like people are gaining one garnet or they're not. Yeah.
Yeah, this was the episode where people were like, they have to start giving out more than one. They're going to start paying out more garnets, but also they have to start paying out more black garnets.
Mm-hmm.
Because one an episode means like we're barely going to see the thing, the Black Garnet Challenge.
Yeah, it seems like we're due for an influx of resources.
Mm-hmm. So, I need more minerals.
I'm ready to see it. You know. Mm-hmm. So I won for the day.
Congratulations!
Still behind overall. Thank you. That means I get to assign both of us some homework.
Very exciting. What are we doing this week?
Alan?
Hi!
For our homework this week, we're going to spend like half an hour or more hanging out while watching some Salty Bet.
Oh, yes!
For those unfamiliar, Salty Bet is a Twitch stream where they play the custom-created fighting game Mugen, where you plug in downloaded characters made by a variety of creators. Anyone can make your own character. And then basically you just bet on who's going to win. Is it going to be Tom Hanks or Godzilla? Is it going to be Goku or a different, worse-drawn Goku? It's going to be very fun.
Is it going to be the Pillsbury Doughboy or Glover? A battle of the whites.
There's some shit you're going to see on there.
Mm-hmm.
So, have you done much Salty Bet in your time?
Like 6 years ago, yeah. That's your name, by the way.
All right, well, I guess you'll get to see how much things have changed.
Mm. This is exciting. I feel like this is one of those where I'm like, yeah, well, we will definitely find something to talk about.
Mm. Yeah.
I got thoughts already.
I mean, it's the magic of Mugen, honestly, is that people just take all these random, like, characters from, like, shows, other games, just, like, things they make up, and they just plug them right in to mm-hmm. the Mugen engine. Alan.
Yes.
It's the plug zone. Fuck. Please plug your things.
I didn't even pick up on it until you said Alan, and I was like, oh, I've been summoned. Shit. Plug. I got plug zoned.
Indeed.
If you like hearing my voice and you'd like to hear it on another podcast, you can do so by listening to Chats, a television podcast, which I host with my friend Magellan, where we watch television shows every week. Right now we're watching Babylon 5, and if you back us on our Patreon, patreon.com/chatspot, if you like our show, you can hear us watch movies and then also talk about serious stuff and jokey stuff sometimes. Check it out. There's a lot there if you want to get into it.
Excellent. If you want to find some of my work, I'm at SixDetmar on Twitter, SixDetmar. And my top post, my pinned post on my Twitter page is listing all the shows and the work that I do. I will specifically call out Patreon, patreon.com/scanlandmedia if you want to back me and my friend Jennifer and help us, you know, do cool shit. Just today, the money from the Patreon kind of saved my ass because I overdrafted a little bit and I was able to fix it with the Patreon.
Ba-da-bum.
Money helps people live.
Capitalism. All right.
And next week I will get a new bumper done because I'll have a couple of days off. I need to get new ones. It was always supposed to be kind of placeholder and I just got lazy, but we need better teasers for the podcasts.
So if you switch it out, will that be a bumper jumper? Is that like right bumper to jump, left trigger to shoot?
Nice work, Alan. That was good.
Thank you. Oh my God. Thank you.
All right. Well, on that note, I'm happy to call it an episode. Thank you, everyone, and peace out.
Bye-bye.